的秘书说的自己多了老婆的家是的这里好是独立哦那个说起来了给你的说naturalmente stanno a guardare attenzioni speciali al dauplata vulnerabile del fatto del via o canale via da più vera uomo da seu il suo per esempio il schema del rangio da via enet l'anziano di già detto al medio o per comunità o all'esso con noi ai suoi agli ahiar e gli ha lo wasco e li eventualmente ridu nel o ridu nimmera o aliak e l'anziani ta' na' ta' ken saħħithom ittihom sa' kien l-abitat saħħom ikun tajjeb għalihom inħalluhom jgħixu kemm jistgħu fil-komunità ma nistgħu tibda li kienu jgħixu fija ta' 30 sena meta ir-raġel kien jibla maswar u llum qiegħed bil-pastur inħalluh jabita l-istess ambitu allura li l-awtorità tad-djar hemmhekk ħadet ftit illi permezz tal-iskema li dan ġaddar tiegħi għenet l-anzjani biex jagħmlu jaddattaw id-dattaħħom biex ikunu aktar kom. Diversi skemi oħrajn intlaħħu u għalhekk rajna kif kien hemm.
So it's a great pleasure for us to have you here. We're very honored that you're visiting us today. As you know, the relations between the Maltese and Palestinian people have always been very strong. And it's been, I think, from 1975 that there have been an office of some kind in Malta from of Palestinian origin. And I think this month we're in the fourth anniversary of our representative office in Ramallah. So things have always gone strongly and we're getting stronger as it goes. We're very pleased that we have this opportunity to talk between yourself as the foreign minister and our committee. As you know, the Foreign Affairs Committee oversees in a very humble way the workings of the government as regards foreign policy. So it's always useful for us that we meet visiting dignitaries and foreign ministers to keep the dialogue going and also to keep all parties in Parliament and not just the government side informed of what is happening in foreign policy. If you agree at some point after we listen to what you can tell us, the members from the committee will maybe intervene and pick up some discussion with yourself. Thank you.
Of the type of affairs that we share. For us, Malta has been, special to Palestine and special to Palestinians because, regardless of who is in power, who is in government, always Malta, stands next to the Palestinians, supports the Palestinian cause, and reflects that in all regional and international forums. For us, this has been very important, and for that reason, we do appreciate that. We appreciate that very much, and we would like very much to see that our relationship between Malta and Palestine, translates itself into deeds and into actions, and not to be only limited to political support, because we believe that political support has to be translated into actions where people could really see the benefit of such relationship in different aspects and different ways. And that's why we have agreed today in the meeting with the foreign minister just to activate the joint commission And we hope that we will agree soon, you know, to hold a joint commission in order really to look into all aspects of relationship between, you know, Malta and Palestine. But at the same time, you know, I want to take this opportunity, since, you know, I'm meeting with the Foreign Affairs Committee, just, you know, to extend an invitation for you to visit Palestine, because, you know, your work is very essential, and meeting with the Palestinian Foreign Minister is an opportunity. But for us, you know, the opportunity will be, you know, completed if the committee comes to Palestine and meets with Palestinians and get acquainted with realities on the ground. This is really important. So please, whenever your schedule, you know, allows, we will be more than happy to receive you, and our ambassador here, will follow that with you. We'll be nagging, you know, you know, all the time. Excellencies, we are meeting on a very, very special, timing, because it happened that that Kerry tomorrow is coming to the region again for a fifth time. And tomorrow he's going to meet with my president, Mahmoud Abbas. The fact that, you know, in about 2 months, you know, he's coming five times, it is really a clear reflection that, you know, Kerry is very serious, very, very much committed and eager, you know, to do something or to succeed where others really have failed. But at the same time, you know, it's very clear that, you know, the task is not that easy. Because, you know, it requires to convince the Israeli side, you know, to come along. It requires to convince the Israeli side that, you know, they have to freeze settlement construction in order for us to be able to negotiate. It requires him, you know, to convince the Israelis that negotiations has to be based on very clear, marks, which is really 67 borders. We have agreed, you know, on a land swap. We, the Palestinians, as a concession of our own, in order really just, you know, to make it much easier and to take into consideration new realities that we, that have been created, you know, since 1967. But, you know, where and how, you know, such land swap depends on the negotiations. When we are in this process of negotiations, only then we will be talking about, you know, percentage, location, all of that, but we only talk about the issue in principle, that, you know, we agree, you know, to land swap. The problem with John Kerry, that, you know, when he comes tomorrow, we don't know to what degree, you know, he's successful or not successful. We have no idea, you know, if he was able to convince Netanyahu, you know, to come on board. We are afraid that his fifth visit is not going to be the last. We are afraid that, you know, his fifth visit will pave the way for further visits, meaning that, you know, he's facing intransigence on the Israeli side, and it means that, you know, he has to do an extra effort in order really to convince the Israelis, you know, to be cooperative and to come forward. But, you know, from our own perspective, you know, we believe that Kerry is sincere, is committed, serious, and he wants really to engage. And we are supporting him fully. We, the Palestinian Authority and the Palestinian leadership, we are committed, you know, to do our utmost to see that, you know, that he succeeds, to see our utmost that, you know, we try to pave the way for his mission. And if he comes to ask for an extension of his mission in terms of time, we are ready to give him that. If he comes, you know, just, you know, to for us, you know, to understand, you know, the difficulties in which he is in, you know, we are ready just, you know, to understand that and to see, you know, where we go. But at the same time, you know, we cannot just, you know, keep this issue an open-ended. We cannot just, you know, keep answering, you know, his request for an extensions without really seeing that there is a deadline for that. You know, even if he puts that deadline to himself, we are not going to ask that from him. But, you know, there is a limit where, you know, one could wait. There is a limit for one where one could also expect efforts to be invested. The problem that we have with the Israelis is that, you know, the Israelis believe that the land that they have really occupied in 1967 is really disputed land. And because it is really disputed land from their perspective, it means that, you know, as an occupying power, and because they have, you know, the power and the control, then, you know, they could inject whatever changes they would like on the ground, without, you know, anyone, you know, asking them for an explanation. And so since 1967 until today, you know, they have created more realities on the ground. They have changed, you know, facts, and they are making, you know, these facts to a certain degree irreversible, in the sense that, you know, we might reach a point where if we're going to sit to negotiate, no territory is left, you know, for us, you know, to negotiate about or even to establish our independent state on. And so that's why, you know, from our perspective, it's very important, you know, time constraint. It's very important from our perspective also, you know, the pace of settlement construction. That's why, you know, we have insisted from the beginning that, you know, Israel has to freeze settlement construction in order for us to be able to sit and to negotiate. Your Excellency, since 1990, onward, when Madrid conference, you know, was held, until today, everybody was telling us, you know, that we should engage in a positive manner with the Israelis on for negotiations, in order really to achieve a peace agreement. But at the same time, no one told us, you know, that, you know, Israel has to free settlement construction, you know, while we are negotiating. And so, 20 years later, we are, you know, in the same place where we have really started 20 years back. But, you know, in terms of realities on the ground, in terms of settlement construction, you know, things have changed. Things have changed, you know, considerably, and the Israelis have added about 300,000 settlers, you know, into the Palestinian occupied territories. They have built more than 120 new settlements and what's called, you know, the illegal outpost, etc. And so it's becoming, you know, very difficult. And that's why, you know, when the Palestinians insist that, you know, yes, we are ready to go back to the negotiations, but Israel has to freeze settlement construction, you know, there is a reason behind that, because, you know, we feel that, that the Israelis are buying time, the Israelis are trying really to please the international community by talking about, you know, their readiness to engage in negotiations with the Palestinians, but in reality what they are doing on the ground is building more settlements. And this is exactly, you know, was disclosed by the deputy defense minister, you know, in Israel, Danny Danon. Danny Danon is a leading Likud member, and he is the deputy minister of defense. He came to the public and he spoke to the Israeli television and Israeli media by saying, you know, look, I want to be very frank, you know, with you as Danny Danon. And not like, you know, the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu always talks to the international community about his readiness to engage with the Palestinians, about his readiness to negotiate with the Palestinians. But in reality, what he does, what all previous governments have done, is really to build settlements and to prevent the creation of an independent Palestinian state. So I'm not going to be like Benjamin Netanyahu. I, Danny Danon, I want to say it, you know, frank, blunt, clear to you, all of you, that, you know, our intentions is to prevent the creation of an independent Palestinian state. We will never allow a Palestinian state to emerge, and the whole idea of two-state solution is a foolish idea. This is really Danny Danon. He said it once, he said it twice, and he said it even more than that. After that, you know, other members of the Israeli government, ministers and deputy ministers, came forward and said exactly the same. Naftali Bennett, who is the head of the Jewish home, and he controls, you know, 20 seats in the Israeli Knesset parliament, and he is a minister of economy. He said exactly the same. He said the two-state solution option is, you know, a false, you know, idea. No Palestinian state will emerge. And even he said that that we, the in Israel, we are the rightful owners of the land, And he said that, you know, we will keep building settlements to the point that we'll become a majority, and the Palestinians in the West Bank will become like settlers, you know, in small locations. This is exactly, you know, Bennett. And then, of course, you know, the Minister of Housing, you know, Uri Ariel, exactly said the same. The Minister of Defense, Yalon, in Washington, he said Kerry's mission has failed and the Palestinians have to be blamed. You know, when you hear all of these statements, and you hear these statements coming from distinguished, you know, leaders within the Israeli government, you know, then, you know, you ask yourself the question, are they serious? Are they serious about the peace process? Are they real partners to peace with the Palestinians? Are they the ones who will negotiate with the Palestinians in good faith in order really to end the occupation, their occupation of Palestinian territory and the establishment of a Palestinian independent state? You start asking, you know, such questions. But the most importantly is not, you know, asking the questions. It's exactly the type of reaction that we have got from the Israeli side. We didn't see any kind of reaction coming from the Prime Minister Netanyahu, from the Israeli cabinet, about, you know, such statements, to negate the statements, to say that statements are false, that the position of the Israeli government is 1, 2, 3, you know, nothing like that happened. Not only this, the international community, you know, were totally absent. These were very strong statements when they say that, you know, Kerry's mission has failed before, you know, even Kerry announced that. When they say that, you know, they will prevent, you know, even by force, the creation of an independent Palestinian state. When they say the two-state solution is a false, you know, idea. And when they say that, you know, they will keep building settlements to the point that the Palestinians will become, you know, settlers in living in Bundestans, you know, in the West Bank. The international community, you know, as if they didn't hear of that, and no reaction whatsoever. And that's why, you know, we reach a point where we wonder, you know, are we alone in this, or we are, you know, supported by the majority of the world and the international community? Because, you know, we expect at least certain, you know, courage from the international community to stand up and to say, this is really, it's not only, you know, against what we believe as international community, but also it's really, you know, endanger the ability of achieving, you know, peace between the parties, between Israel and the Palestinians. You know, we are extremely worried, and we want to see some actions and some results. Still, we believe that Kerry's visit tomorrow, is a reflection of his continuous commitment to do more and more. But, you know, at the same time, you know, Excellencies, we believe that there should be a time where the international community, not only the Palestinians, should really sit together and try to see, you know, what should be done, how to react to this, how to salvage, you know, the process itself, how to make, you know, to bring, you know, justice to the Palestinians, and how really to put an end to the conflict, Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and, you know, Israeli-Arab, you know, conflict. This really requires further intervention, you know, proactive from the part of the international community, but also, you know, the European Union bears certain responsibility. Because of proximity, because, you know, of responsibility, moral and political. And, you know, we believe that the European Union, in different stratas, being, you know, governments, being really commission, being parliament, etc., political parties, you know, has to be, you know, very, very, very active in trying to safeguard what we have started, to safeguard the two-state solution option as, you know, the only available option for us, and to see, you know, that solving the conflict, you know, requires, you know, what you call it, strong, committed interventions on part of the international community. Excellencies, you know, settlements are considered to be illegal according to international law, And we believe that everything pertaining settlements should be also seen as such. Meaning, you know, if there are products being really produced from such settlements, should be defined and seen as illegal, the same way that we see settlements. And, you know, settlers, individuals who live in these settlements in total violation of international law, should be seen also and characterized as illegal from the international point of view, legal point of view. And that's why, you know, Excellencies, you know, we have been very much encouraged by the initiative that was taken among certain countries within the European Union to try to label settlement products in certain European countries and markets in order to educate European consumers about these products that were produced, you know, in settlements. But also, you know, as you know, Excellencies, that there are so many settlers who have been very violent in dealing with the Palestinians, living in illegal settlements in total violation of international law. And most of these violent settlers, you know, are visiting, you know, Schengen space in different occasions and under different, you know, different levels. So what we'd like very much is that, you know, if there is are any possibilities for, you know, the Maltese Parliament, you know, to start thinking about, you know, presenting some kind of some motions, ideas to be debated, you know, within the European Parliament and others, you know, about the way how to deal with the whole concept of settlements. Because, you know, if settlements according to EU resolutions are considered to be illegal, then, you know, of course, everything that, you know, the outcome of these settlements has to be seen exactly the same way. And, you know, we would like very much, you know, just, you know, to see that national parliaments and European Parliament, you know, is trying to take this issue at, you know, at a higher level of consultation and of discussion, order really to send a message to Israel that, you know, Europe, you know, cannot tolerate, you know, such Israeli behavior in total violation of international law and against, you know, the existence, the mere existence of the Palestinian people in their own territory. Excellencies, you know, Israel from day one until today, they have been introducing, you know, an apartheid regime, you know, in the occupied Palestinian territory, exactly an apartheid regime. You know, when they build, you know, road networks exclusive to settlers, different from the road network that, you know, exists for the Palestinians, and deprive the Palestinians from using, you know, the other road network, this is really segregation, and this is really apartheid. When they, you know, manage and operate buses exclusive for settlers and buses exclusive for Palestinians, this is exactly segregation and this is exactly, you know, apartheid. When they, of course, you know, allow and issue special permits for Palestinians to carry in order for them to be able to enter into closed areas within the West Bank, and even, you know, including East Jerusalem, this is all exactly, you know, segregation, and this is really apartheid. And that's why, you know, and the list goes on. You know, the whole idea is that, you know, you know, in the 21st century, we see ourselves, you know, witnessing, you know, the implementation, the practical implementation of an apartheid regime in the Palestinian occupied territories by Israel as an occupying power. And maybe, you know, there should be, you know, certain stance, certain position by the international community, but I'm talking about EU in particular, you know, how to deal with this issue and to say that, you know, we cannot tolerate, you know, the fact that there is an apartheid regime being really implemented against the Palestinians in their own occupied territories. You know, I did not really classify this as an apartheid. You know, it's up to, you know, many South African delegations, you know, who came to visit us, including, you know, Desmond Tutu and among others who came and they were shocked by the fact that, you know, what exists in the Palestinian-occupied territories is, to a certain extent, even, you know, worse in certain areas and certain aspects than at that time the apartheid regime that exists in South Africa. You know, the question is, you know, what we are going to do about it, and how really just to create an alarm in order really to create consciousness among, you know, the world community. But in particular for us, what we are concerned of is, of course, you know, our neighbors, you know, within Europe and the European Union, who have been taking, you know, for so many years, very courageous stand in support of the Palestinian people. You know, if I do recall recently, you know, the resolution in December 2010, and after that, you know, in May 2012, these were, you know, very strong statements that were taken by the European Union to highlight, you know, where the European Union really stands. Obviously, it seems that, you know, these statements and these declarations are not really enough for Israel, you know, just to revise its own course, and it seems that, you know, that Israel has become, you know, immune to such declaration, to a point that, you know, they have continued, you know, building settlements. They have continued bringing in settlers in the Palestinian-occupied territories. They have continued confiscating Palestinian land. They have continued burning trees, burning mosques, and burning churches. And they have allowed, you know, their settlers, under the protection of their army, you know, to rampage everywhere, you know, within the occupied Palestinian territories. And that's why, you know, Excellencies, at one point, yes, we are fully committed to the peace process. We are fully committed to the process initiated by John Kerry, and we want to see him, you know, successful in his approach. And we are putting all our support and help behind him. But at the same time, you know, we are very much worried and concerned about, you know, the transformation within Israel, you know, the type of laws and bylaws that have been really passed within the Israeli Knesset in recent years. You know, it worries us a lot, because, you know, this transformation is indicating to us that Israel is moving from being, you know, a democratic state into a fascist state in all its aspects. And one, you know, has to be worried, because at the end of the day, we are going to coexist alongside Israel. We want really to live alongside Israel, and we are really very much worried, you know, if our neighbor is, you know, fascist in its approach and discriminates against, you know, the Arab minorities, and really insists in maintaining, you know, an apartheid regime in the Palestinian-occupied territories.
4 minutes. So thank you very much for your clear explanation of how facts are developing in the Middle East, really. We're very pleased the news that you are giving us, that you have, together with Foreign Minister George Vella, agreed to start the meetings of the Joint Economic Cooperation Committee. I think, as you point out, from politics we can go on to something more concrete, and probably this is one forum where this can happen. We're also very, very pleased with your invitation for the Foreign Affairs Committee of the Maltese Parliament to visit Palestine. And I can assure you that your ambassador will not need to push us, because we will be pushing him for this visit. We will do it very, very eagerly. We're, of course, pleased that the peace process, especially with the initiatives being taken by Secretary of State Kerry, has over these recent months reactivated, you can say. And of course, the Maltese Parliament believes in a two-state solution. And we see the problem of settlements as an impediment to this two-state solution. And we believe that as long as settlements continue going on by the Israeli people, that the peace process will have difficulties in establishing itself. We see this as a fact. We're also very pleased with the initiative of the land swap that you are proposing, and I believe this is also in line with the Arab Peace Initiative, which, as a Maltese Parliament, we think is a step forward in negotiations in the Middle East. I will ask the members of the committee for the comments at the stage, and then maybe you can wind up, because I know that at 3:30 you have a meeting with Mr. Speaker,
So we don't want him to be waiting for too long.
Well, Foreign Minister, also from the opposition side, our gratitude for you being here and for also giving us this very detailed explanation of the latest state of play, as it were, in Palestine. Certainly from our perspective and representing a party, but I would say this certainly as equally applicable to all political forces in Malta, where the concept of nationhood is so much ingrained in our own way of thinking, in our own natural Maltese mission statement, if you like, that this has made it natural for us throughout the years to precisely support your own cause towards nationhood. In this respect, I consider myself very privileged that even in my short tenure as Minister for Foreign Affairs, but it was precisely, I believe, on the second day of my assuming that office, that there was precisely the vote in the General Assembly of the United Nations on Resolution 67/19. And it was my privilege to endorse the political direction in favor of that resolution. Of course, when we did that, and there are always arguments about in which direction does a country move, but in Malta's case it was clear that we affirm precisely our position in favor of Palestinian nationhood, and that this would be one more step towards that, because the vote was, of course, for your assuming a non-member observatory role. But it is certainly another step in the right direction. There was always the, perhaps, one element of preoccupation, which is, would this impact positively or will this impact negatively on the negotiations for the total peace settlement? And our position is it should impact positively also because it gives a very clear sign of solidarity in favor of the ruling authority in your country. And we felt that that form of leadership needed to be strengthened and needed to be given that form of support. So let me restate that also today. And also perhaps to place it in a wider context, because it was some weeks after this vote that I also had the occasion to join other European ministers of foreign affairs in a meeting which was convened in Rome at Villa Madama, when United States Secretary of State had come over to Rome to meet European ministers for foreign affairs. And we had a very frank discussion about various issues of foreign policy pertaining to the government of the United States of America, but especially where those issues have then a bearing on relations between United States and European Union, and where we deem that there are some areas of particular specialization that pertain to the European Union sphere. And of course, one of those areas of specialization is certainly the whole concept of the Middle East peace process. And I remember even having had the opportunity to tell the Secretary of State that European ministers, Malta in particular, we've always favored and we will always favor the two-state solution. But the two-state solution, by definition, needs land for the two states to develop. If the land that is earmarked for the Palestinian state is land that keeps on being encroached upon through settlements or through threat of settlements, but even now through physical settlements, then obviously the two-state solution becomes one that is very difficult to achieve. And therefore, and of course it was at that meeting that Senator Kerry had announced his determination to visit the area as often and as required as possible, and we can certainly notice, and I think there is hope in the fact that that is being done. But this remains a very, very delicate process, and I think certainly it is an opportunity from our end to not only re-express solidarity with you, but to wish you also the best of success in that regard. Of course, perhaps one area you could elucidate further with us in this regard is also the question of stability in your own state and in your own government. We are conscious of the fact of the recent change of the Prime Minister, and of course always conscious of the situation that causes a degree of internal conflict. And I think it is very much in your interest that those matters are always as resolved and as addressed as concretely as possible. Because the more there is stability, the more it will be difficult for people who try to raise the security argument against what, in my opinion, would be the real just solution, which is the solution in favor of full nationhood, which is the one I immediately referred to in the beginning. Obviously, one would be putting at ease any possible discomfort felt in that regard. And therefore, you might wish to share with us what are the latest developments in this regard, what are the prospects that are evolving, the prospects internally, the prospects also in line with the Arab peace process. And once again, renewed best wishes and renewed solidarity. Thank you for being with us.
If you can maybe take a few minutes to respond, and then we can maybe wind up in this meeting.
Thank you, it's an opportunity for me, you know, to thank you also personally for taking the decision, you know, on the instructions, you know, to for the vote in the General Assembly, 29th of November last year. Well, you see, it's true that, you know, we are having, you know, some internal problems. It's true, as you know, it happens between peoples everywhere. Maybe this is affecting us more than others because we are still under occupation, and we have tried very hard, you know, just, you know, to overcome the division that, you know, that exists, you know, and to start the process of reconciliation, especially with Hamas people, you know, in Gaza. And the president himself, you know, made tremendous efforts personally in order really to see that that reconciliation really starts. You know, the problem that, you know, we have to acknowledge in this regard, that, you know, the elements affecting the decision are sometimes not necessarily internal elements rather than external elements. And when they are external elements, then, you know, you have no control over them to a certain degree. Internal elements, yes, it's true that even within Hamas themselves right now, there is a division between Hamas inside and Hamas outside, between Hamas in Gaza and Hamas, you know, outside. And it seems that such people have been connected to certain external forces. And these external forces are manipulating, you know, both Hamas, the internal and external, in a way to serve, you know, the interest of such an external forces rather than to serve the interest of the Palestinian people and the Palestinian cause. Unfortunately, this is really is the case. Now, the external forces, obviously, Hamas has looked at the development that was taking place, you know, in the region, and they felt that the way that the Muslim Brotherhood is gaining influence and control in certain Arab countries, and particularly in Egypt, this might really help them to empower Hamas in facing, you know, the type of discussions and negotiations with Fatah within you know, Palestine. And so when they saw that the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt won the elections, they started just, you know, to raising their bar, you know, in terms of their expectations and their demands. This really was true to a certain degree. And at the same time, you know, the people who were in Gaza, who started really just to benefit from the status quo, because Hamas has developed an alternative economy, you know, in Gaza through the you know, the tunnel you know, system, smuggling a lot of products and making a lot of profit. This by itself really made that certain leadership within Hamas in Gaza to prefer to maintain the status quo over, you know, the possibility for rapprochement, you know, with the West Bank, and to put the end to the division. You know, we are in this, and we hope that that we will be able to put an end to the division. The idea was that you know, we establish and we create a transitional government. That transitional government has one objective, is to prepare for elections, and whoever will win the elections, you know, will form that the new government, and that's it. So the establishment of transitional government by itself ends practically the division. Because, you know, there will be no government in Gaza and no government in the West Bank, only one government that, you know, prepares for the elections. That simple fact, you know, ends the division. Now, in terms of reconciliation, it might take, you know, some time for people to overcome, you know, certain wants, but if the process should really start. We have agreed, you know, with Hamas to start this process, but then, you know, Hamas came with certain excuses that, you know, they are having internal elections and they want really to elect their new Politburo. And so if we could really just delay, you know, the implementation of a new government. When they finished their elections, you know, they came out with a new excuse just, you know, to delay the process even further. What happened that, you know, in our side, we are having a government, a transitional government, with the objective that, you know, we will reach a point where Hamas will come in, join in, and then, of course, there will be a government that will prepare for elections. So in this we are. Obviously, you know, when you live under occupation, when your plans and projects are somehow affected by the occupation, when you cannot really plan exactly what you will be doing tomorrow, so forget about planning, you know, strategically for 3, 4, 5, 10 years. This really, you know, weakens you tremendously. And when the process itself, you know, the negotiations and negotiations with Israel is not really working, then, you know, of course, this also weakens you even further. Because at one point you are promoting, you know, peace negotiations with the Israelis, that the solution to the conflict should be through negotiations, but you cannot even, you know, start that process of negotiations. When you talk about liberating people, but, you know, through, you know, steadfastness and through, you know, nonviolent resistance, when, you know, the Israelis use violence, you know, in order to impose their situation, when you try to develop your economy, but you cannot because the Israelis are imposing certain conditions in your way to prevent you from developing the economy the way that you want, this weakens you very much as an authority, and, you know, and puts you in a situation where, you know, you cannot move further. You talk about you know, reconciliation with Hamas, and then Hamas says, "Well, I want to wait to see how things will emerge in Egypt, in Syria, in Lebanon, in Iraq, etc., etc." And so you become hostage. You become hostage to so many external elements that, you know, is weakening you tremendously to a point where, you know, you see yourself, you know, standing still. And this is exactly where we are in terms of government. You know, the president, yes, formed a new government and called for a new prime minister, etc. The prime minister found that, you know, he is already, you know, hostage to these new realities. He doesn't want to be seen or to be named in history as a person who really was given that opportunity, but, you know, his hands are tied and he cannot really move anywhere. So he wanted just, you know, to quit immediately when he realized the difficulties, enormous difficulties that he's facing, and the idea was, you know, just to convince him just to stay for a while to see how we all together could really move things and cooperate in order really to make things, you know, much smoother in our way, you know, forward.
Formis, I think we can say we had a very fruitful hour with you today, and I'm sure that a lot of the points that we discussed today we will keep thinking about, talking about even in our next meeting of Foreign Affairs Committee. It's been a great honor for us to have you with us today, and I'm sure that your invitation will be met very eagerly by all of us, and we will hope to meet to meet you soon in Palestine.
Excellent idea.
Look forward. Thank you very much.